56. Henry and Richard. A pale boy with a very thin beard was holding a rectangle of white cardboard inscribed with Henry and Richard in green marker as they left the customs hall. He wore a dusty-looking, no doubt expensively Dickensian chimney sweep suit.
"That's us," said Hollis, stopping their luggage cart beside him and offering him her hand. "Hollis Henry, this is Odile Richard."
"Oliver Slight," he said, tucking his sign under his arm, "like sleight of hand." Offering his to shake, first with Hollis, then Odile. "Ollie, Blue Ant Vancouver."
"Pamela told me there was no office up here,"
Hollis said, pushing the cart toward the exit. It was a few minutes after 11.
"No office," he said, walking beside them. "But that doesn't mean there's no work. This is a game design center, and we have clients through other offices, so there's still a need for hands-on. Let me push that for you."
"No need, thanks."
They went out through an automatic door and past a crowd of post-flight smokers working back up to functional blood nicotine levels. Odile was evidently one of a new generation of non-smoking French and had been delighted that Hollis no longer smoked. But Slight, Ollie, as they followed him across a striped section of covered roadway, produced a yellow pack of cigarettes, lighting up. Hollis started to remember something, but then the difference in the air struck her after Los Angeles. It was like a sauna, but cool, almost chilly. They went up a ramp into a covered parking lot, where he used a credit card to pay for parking, then led them to his car, an oversized Volkswagen like the one Pamela had driven. It was pearlescent white, with a small, stylized Blue Ant glyph to the left of the rear license plate. He helped them stow their bags and her cardboard carton in the trunk. He dropped his half-smoked cigarette and crushed it with an elongated, elaborately distressed shoe that she supposed went with his look. Odile opted for shotgun, which seemed to please him, and soon they were on their way, something half-remembered scratching fitfully in Hollis's head. They cruised past large, airport-related buildings, like toys on some giant's tidy, sparsely detailed hobby layout.
"You're going to be the fourth ever residence in our flat," he said. "The Sultan of Dubai's public relations team were there last month. They had their own business here, but wanted to meet with Hubertus, so we put them up there, and Hubertus came up. Before that, twice, we had people in from our London office."
"It's not Hubertus's place, then?"
"I suppose it is," he said, changing lanes for the approach to a bridge, "but one of many. The view's extraordinary."
Hollis saw uncomfortably bright lights on tall poles beyond the bridge's railings, overlooking a visual clutter of industry. Her cell rang.
"Excuse me," she said.
"Yes?"
"Where are you?"
said Inchmail.
"In Vancouver.
I, however, am in the lobby of your achingly pretentious hotel."
"I'm sorry. They sent me up here. I tried to reach you, but your cell wasn't answering, and your hotel said you were gone."
"Hotbed of locative art?"
"I don't know yet. Just got here."
"Where are you staying?"
"In a flat that Blue Ant has."
"You should insist on serious hotels."
"Well," she said, glancing at Ollie, who was listening to Odile, "I'm told we'll like it."
"Is that the Royal We?"
"A curator from Paris, who specializes in locative art. They brought her to Los Angeles for the piece. She'll be very helpful up here. Has contacts."
"When are you back here?"
"I don't know. Shouldn't be long. How long are you there?"
"As long as it takes to produce the bollards. Tomorrow we're having a first look at the studio."
"Which one?"
"Place on West Pico, after our time."
"Much is."
"Is what?"
"After our time."
"Why, for instance, are there these types with Star Wars helmets standing at the foot of the Marmont's driveway, staring as if transfixed? I saw them earlier when I checked in."
"They're viewing a monument to Helmut Newton. I know the artist, Alberto Corrales."
"But there's nothing there."
"You need the helmet," she explained.
"Dear God."
"You're at the Marmont?"
"I will be when I've gotten back across Sunset."
"I'll call you, Reg. I should go."
"Bye, then."
Long past the first bridge, and still on the wide street they'd turned onto, they drove through a stretch of carefully styled shops and restaurants. Jimmy Carlyle, who'd spent 2 years playing bass with a band in Toronto before joining the curfew, had told her that Canadian cities looked the way American cities did on television.